Chapter 9. Derek is left waiting in the interrogation room for upwards of 10 minutes, which annoys him, even though it doesn't surprise him. The lawyer Keith had recommended, a heavy-set but surprisingly soft-spoken man named Omar, comes in and sits down next to Derek. He introduces himself and shakes Derek's hand. "We don't even have to do this," he says. "Agent McCall has no evidence that you were involved in any of these crimes. Say the word, and I'll tell him we're not even having an interview." "That'll only make him more of a jerk," Derek says, rolling his eyes. "I'll talk to him. I was on my property during the first two murders, and the security system will show that there's no way I could have come or gone. The third and fourth, I don't have an alibi, if that matters to you." Omar shrugs as if to say it doesn't really matter. Stiles, watching through the mirror, is frustrated by this. Derek was with him during both of those murders, but it was at school, in his fur and his vest, so there's no way they can present that in a court of law. "It's really the first that concerns me. Were you alone on your property that night?" "No," Derek says, shaking his head. "Stiles was there with me." "Well, he won't like that," Omar says. "He's probably going to ask a lot of completely irrelevant questions. Give a straight answer, say as little as possible." Derek's stare bores into the wall. "No problem." Omar gives a little snort. "If I think he's getting out of line, I'll tell him to knock it off. If there's a question I think you shouldn't answer, I'll tell you." He stands up and says, "Now, I think I'll go see what's taking him so long." The lawyer leaves the room. Stiles looks through the mirror and sees Derek roll his eyes. His lupa is tense, but it's tension from being irritated, not being afraid. It's the best he can hope for. A few minutes later, Omar comes back in. Agent McCall follows and gives Derek the least sincere smile ever seen on the planet. "Mr. Hale, thank you for coming in," he says. Derek shrugs a little in reply. He's not about to say, "You're welcome," when the man isn't welcome at all. He doesn't care about being polite. "So," McCall says, sitting down across from him, "what is your relationship with Isaac Leahy?"
"We're friends,"
Derek says flatly.
"For how long?"
"About 2 years." "And how did you make his acquaintance?"
"Through Stiles and Scott,"
Derek says. It's blatantly untrue, but there's no FBI-friendly way to say, "I lifted a backhoe off him after he fell into an open grave." He could have elaborated by explaining that the three teenagers were on the same lacrosse team, but decides against it. Omar had said to say as little as possible.
"Mm-hmm," McCall says. "Because you and Stiles are boyfriends, right? Were you boyfriends back then?"
"Yes to the first, no to the second."
"Oh, that's a relief, because Stiles would have only been 16 back then, if I can do my math correctly."
Omar glowers at this and says, "If you were thinking about accusing my client of something, I'm going to put a stop to that right now. There's nothing illegal about dating somebody younger than you."
"Of course not," McCall says. "But I have to admit that I find it odd that Derek's friends are all in Stiles' age group rather than his own."
Derek shrugs again and raises his eyebrows, clearly suggesting that it's McCall's problem that he finds it odd, not Derek's.
"Especially you and Stiles," McCall continues. "I mean, it's a head-scratcher, given the history between your two families. I'm trying to work it out. I feel like there's a real romantic comedy potential there. Boy meets boy. Boy accuses boy of murder. Boy's serial-killing uncle kidnaps boy and leaves him in a car trunk for 2 days. Boy, dates boy? The corner of Derek's lips twitch just a little, and then his expression goes flat again. Styles recognizes that Derek is amused at this point, because his lack of words at this point is clearly annoying the shit out of Agent McCall. Not a chatty fellow, are you? McCall says, with a tight smile. Derek just stares at him. McCall stares back for a moment, then says abruptly, "When was the last time you saw your uncle?" There's only the briefest of pauses before Derek says, "December of 2011. He manages to keep a blank expression, but Styles can feel his curiosity. Under what circumstances? Omar clears his throat. Mr. Hale, you don't need to answer that question. To McCall, he says, we agreed to come here so Mr. Hale could be asked questions about the murders of Roger Leahy and those that followed. This is completely irrelevant. And what's more, you have no business asking questions about a family tragedy that my client has long since put behind him. If he has a history of consorting with criminals, he does not, Omar says. Consorting with criminals and being related to one are different things. But two serial killers in the same town, only 2 years apart? McCall is still smiling. What are the odds of that? I haven't done the math, and neither have you. Until you have solid evidence that Peter Hale is involved in these crimes, and something to go on beyond vague suspicion and grandstanding, then you will keep your questions restricted to the matters at hand, or this interview will be terminated. Derek shoots a glance at the window, as if to ask Styles if he's enjoying the show. Then he rests his elbow on the table and continues staring at McCall. McCall's smile has gone thin and brittle. Very well. Mr. Hale, do you recall your whereabouts the night of April 11th, 2013? That would have been a Tuesday, if it helps.
Yes, Derek says.
McCall waits for more. The silence goes on a beat too long to be uncomfortable, before McCall clears his throat and says, Okay, Mr. Hale, where were you the night of April 11th, 2013?
At home.
I see. And can anyone vouch for your whereabouts?
Yes, Derek says.
There's another long pause. Styles starts stifling the fit of hysterical giggles he can feel coming on. McCall's mouth tightens and says, Who precisely can vouch for your whereabouts that night?
Styles.
Use his legal name, Omar says quietly.
I can't pronounce it. Last name is Stilinski.
Styles stayed the night at your place? Hmm? McCall says. Derek's stare continues to punch holes in McCall's forehead.
Obviously.
Does he do that often? Derek considers that and turns to Omar.
Is he allowed to ask that?
Omar sighs. Yes, because the more involved you are with the person vouching for you, the softer your alibi becomes. There's a pause while Derek thinks about that, decides that makes sense, and then turns back to McCall.
Yes, he stays at my place often. But if you need further proof that I didn't leave the house that night, there's also my security system.
He adds, giving McCall the freebie, because he knows it will only piss him off more. Yes, so I've heard, McCall says. Can you describe it for me?
There's an electric fence that surrounds my property. The system records when it's turned on and off, so it will show that I didn't leave the property that night.
How is it armed? McCall asks.
Derek frowns a little. How?
Yes, how? Is there a code with a keypad, a switch, what?
There's a remote that arms and disarms it.
Oh, a remote, McCall says. So it's possible that you could have armed it for the night despite not technically being on the property, and then disarmed it when you returned the next morning?
Yes, that would be possible.
Derek doesn't look worried. In fact, if Styles is reading his expression right, he wants McCall to run with this. Unfortunately for Derek, McCall doesn't. I see, he says, and jots down another note.
How much do you know about Isaac's relationship with his father?
I know he chose not to live with the man.
I hear his home situation was pretty bad. A lot of abuse. McCall leans back in his chair. That must have been difficult for you, watching a friend suffer.
I didn't watch him suffer. I didn't meet him until after he was living with Melissa and Scott.
But still, you must have heard about it, witnessed the aftermath.
Yeah, Derek says, his stare becoming even more intense. Living with an abusive father came up a lot in the McCall house.
Stiles can't help it. He just bursts into laughter. Derek steals a glance towards the mirror. He can hear Stiles, even though the humans in the room can't. It takes effort to keep a smile from tugging at his lips. McCall is clearly put off by this remark, and his jaw tightens further. Do you know any of these people? He asks, putting photographs of the other three victims on the table in front of Derek. Stiles leans forward to give them a look.
No.
Are you sure? Even just as acquaintances?
If I had been unsure, I would have said so. No, I do not know them.
You seem defensive. Derek's eyebrow goes up.
No, this is just me.
Where were you yesterday afternoon, between the hours of 1 and 4 p.m.?
At home,
Derek says, since being a service dog wouldn't go over very well. And can anyone vouch for that?
Nope.
Derek's reply was just as flat and calm as everything else he had said.
I see.
McCall jotted down some notes on his little pad, waiting as the silence stretches out. It certainly doesn't seem to bother Derek.
Now, Mr. Guerrero, I'm going to have to ask a few questions about Peter Hale. The fact is, he's killed people in Beacon Hills before, and he's been missing for over 2 years.
Do I have solid evidence that he's involved?
No, but serial killers typically don't just stop. They may fall into a period of quiet, but they don't stop. So, Mr. Hale, what were the circumstances of the last time you saw your uncle?
It was in his hospital room.
Derek lies smoothly. He almost adds something like, we didn't talk much since he was catatonic, but refrains, since the short answers seem to piss McCall off more. If he's going to have to talk about Peter, he wants McCall to be as miserable as he is.
And was that before or after you knew he was murdering people?
Don't answer that, Omar says to Derek, then turns back to McCall and says, how about you phrase that in a manner that makes it seem less like you're trying to bait my client into somehow incriminating himself? McCall's smile goes thin again and he says, when you last saw your uncle, were you aware that people were being murdered in Beacon Hills?
Yes.
Did you talk to him about it?
Yes.
Of course you would have. Your sister Laura was the first victim. Why did Peter kill your sister?
Please stop asking my client things that he can't possibly be expected to know, Omar says, with a trace of annoyance in his voice. McCall's smile doesn't falter. What did Peter have to say for himself?
Nothing. He was catatonic.
Apparently he wasn't.
Apparently not, Derek agrees dryly.
McCall gives him another long look.
So the last time you saw Peter, you had no idea that he was a serial killer.
Correct.
Derek wonders if he looks as bored as he feels. If nothing else, it's hard to get emotionally worked up about this anymore. It's not that he doesn't care. It's more that he's still emotionally exhausted on the topic.
Do you think your uncle would come to you if he decided to come back to Beacon Hills?
No, Derek says.
Why not?
You are his only family left, after all.
And whose fault is that? Do the math. I thought you were good at it.
McCall glowers again.
Well, son, I'm afraid to say that I'm also pretty good at being a cop, and I think you're lying about a lot of things. I think you know exactly where your uncle is. Now, whether or not he's involved in this current string of murders, I honestly don't know.
But I have a hard time believing that after what he did, he just walked out of Beacon Hills and vanished into the ether. Derek looks him right in the eye. Don't call me son. McCall is smiling now. I notice you're not arguing about anything else. I was instructed to answer questions. You haven't asked one. All you've done is state your opinion. Well, what do you think of my opinion? I don't care about your opinion. That seems awfully unwise. Omar stands. This interview is over. My client has not been contacted by Peter Hale, and he doesn't know where he went after he left Beacon Hills. If Peter contacts my client, he will inform the appropriate authorities immediately. Omar's voice makes it clear that those authorities are not going to be McCall. Derek stands as well, trusting Omar. McCall just offers them a nasty smile and says, I'll be in touch. You do that, Derek says, smiling right back. When he steps out of the interrogation room, Stiles is there, pacing back and forth. His hair is standing up in tufts like he's been yanking on it, and his frustration and rage is practically boiling over. Omar doesn't pay him any mind, but just says to Derek, If he ever comes near you, call me immediately. I'll sue his ass for harassment. Derek is already moving towards Stiles, offering his hand rather than crowding him. In that case, I almost hope he tries. I don't! Stiles snaps, and stomps towards the door without another word. Derek winces a little. Thanks, he tells Omar, and then follows Stiles, unsure of what exactly he's going to be dealing with. Stiles is waiting in the Jeep. As soon as Derek slides in, he bites out, I hate that guy so much! I can't decide if he's obnoxious or just stupid, Derek says. It's a toss-up. Stiles is quiet for a long moment before he says, It would be easier if he were stupid. Well, he's not as smart as he'd like everyone to think. Derek's quiet for a minute. He didn't hurt me. I know that, damn it! Stiles snaps. Don't you think I can't tell when you're hurting? I think sometimes it doesn't hurt to tell you anyway, Derek points out. Stiles says nothing for a long moment. Then he pushes both his hands through his hair and says, Jesus, let's get out of here. He slams the Jeep into reverse with more force than necessary and backs out of the parking space. Derek nods and stays quiet, just letting Stiles drive, waiting to see if he'll say anything else. For several long minutes, he doesn't. He heads out of town and coasts along the old country roads. Gradually, the tension starts to drain out of him. There's a certain relief in not being expected or needed anywhere at the moment. Finally, he says, God, I'm so sick of fucking food I can barely pronounce. Let's go grab a cheeseburger. There's a long pause where Derek blinks at him. You're my favorite person ever. Stiles snorts. This from the guy who wouldn't even try the soup. Even Scott tried it. Derek makes a face. I smelled it. Does it help if I feel guilty about not trying it? No, it doesn't help. You're an idiot. Stiles informs him, smirking. I'll forgive you for not trying the stuff with cabbage in it, but not for not trying the chudnik just because it was pink. It was weird. Derek folds his arms over his chest and looks petulant. You're weird, Stiles retorts. Anyway, don't mess with my grandmother. She survived the Holocaust, you know. Derek snorts in amusement. Your grandmother is terrifying. It was beautiful. So was the look on McCall's face. Yeah, Stiles says. He turns onto the road that will take them back into town. Jesus, I kind of flipped my shit there, though. If your eyes hadn't changed, I would have let you go over the table at him, Derek says. So would Scott. They only changed for a second, Stiles grumbles. Then he frowns.
and I'm pretty sure that you shouldn't be condoning me attacking an FBI agent with my bare hands, as long as my eyes stay brown. That seems like a poor life strategy.
Derek shrugs without remorse.
Most FBI agents? Yes. Him? He deserves to have his face introduced to a brick wall.
Pretty sure I'd still get in trouble, regardless of how much he deserves it,
Stiles says, pulling into the parking lot of a Sonic. Derek snorts.
Who would believe him if we said he had no idea how he came by those injuries? Melissa can be pretty convincing, I'm sure, and I'm willing to bet his own coworkers want to punch him.
Yeah, probably. I guess I don't look like the type who would be able to floor an asshole like that.
Stiles cranks the window down and orders for both of them. He knows what Derek likes at every fast food restaurant in town. He pays and then settles back into his seat to wait for their food, pushing a hand through his hair.
The thing at the house? Okay, that was just him being the same old asshole. But the interrogation?
He's clearly got control issues.
That's it, Stiles says, one hand thumping against the steering wheel. He's not going to let this go. He's going to keep digging and digging until he finds something.
But there's nothing to find, Derek points out.
Then he thinks back to the way McCall had kept circling back to Peter in any way he could, adding that to how tense and upset Stiles is, and the pieces click together.
Are you worried about him finding out what happened to Peter?
Stiles is quiet for a long minute before he just says, "Yeah." Derek nods a little and doesn't immediately reply. The window is open and they're expecting someone to approach. Once the food has arrived and the windows are rolled back up, Derek says,
"What is there for him to find?"
"I don't know. I can't stop thinking about it. About what would happen if he found Peter's body."
"They'd have to identify him before they could do anything. And that's only if he figures out where I buried him and can come up with enough evidence to get a warrant to start digging up my property."
From the tone of his voice, Derek clearly isn't convinced that this is going to happen.
"I know that. I know that. I know he's got no reason to think he's dead. McCall doesn't suspect murder. He thinks we let him go because we felt his murders were justified. He thinks we helped hide him and that you know where he is. He's way off base. Even if they found his body, we could just pin it on Gerard, who had just as much motive and a known history of trying to kill people when he didn't get his way. I know all this.
Derek thinks about that, and about how to make Stiles translate thought into emotion. He decides to start with the basics.
Identifying the body would be basically impossible, even if they found out.
Stiles picks at his cheeseburger.
Yeah, I guess werewolves don't have a lot of dental records, huh?
No.
Derek shakes his head.
At this point, they're...
He stops awkwardly. They're eating, after all, and he's not sure how much Stiles will appreciate what he's going to say while he's munching on fries. Stiles just looks at him questioningly, so he continues, trying not to give too much detail.
There's nothing left, really. Some hair, maybe, and bones. Certainly nothing they could take prints from, and no identifying features.
Yeah, Stiles says. I know. It's not about that, Dare. You can't tackle this with logic. Not even with me.
He huffs out a sigh. At least Gwen has gotten me to the point where I can figure out when I'm just fucked up about something. And having killed Peter is probably always going to be one of those things.
Derek concedes, with a nod. Would it help if I promised not to let you assault him?
A little, but half the time we're not even together. And that's putting me on edge, too.
I guess that a lot of this is because I'm not getting enough time with the pack. Without realizing what he's doing, Stiles rubs one hand up and down his arm.
I feel really alone. Which is probably stupid. You guys are there if I need you.
No, it's not stupid.
There's no hesitation in Derek's tone.
It's hard going from constant contact to being cut off.
Even if we're available, it isn't the same. He reaches out and takes Styles' hand. Styles grips it hard. I see them at school, but it's not the same. There's always other people around, other stuff going on. I can't just relax with them and have pat cuddles. It's just, God, it's making me so fucking tense. And you know how I get when my hands are tied. And McCall is just... I just want to come down and say I'm a fucking alpha and he needs to step off. I'm used to being able to do that now.
Well, we can arrange a pack movie night, Derek says. Your grandparents don't expect you to spend every free moment with them. As for Agent Douche Nozzle, maybe just let me handle him. I mean, that's one of the things your Lupa is for. To handle what you can't, for whatever reason.
Yeah, I guess that's true. The Lupa and the Enforcers. And I probably shouldn't give him to Allison and Isaac, no matter how satisfying that would be.
Derek gives an abrupt laugh. He wouldn't last 5 minutes against Allison.
You're being way too generous, Styles sighs. And no, my grandparents don't expect me to entertain them every moment of the day, but it's a good way to keep them from poking their noses into things. Dad doesn't have a lot of time because of the investigation, and even when I'm not spending time with them, I'm buried in homework. The teachers all seem to have realized there's less than 2 months of school left, and they're piling it all on. Finstock would have us practicing until 8 p.m. if there weren't laws against it. I just have too much on my plate right now.
Use the homework as an excuse. Study groups. Or hell, have it be the truth. The whole pack can have homework nights. God knows Erica could use some supervision.
Put me in a room with Erica right now, and studying will be the last thing on my mind.
Styles groans.
I haven't gotten laid in over a month.
Maybe you should, Derek says.
Yeah, that probably isn't helping my stress level either, Styles says. I think right now I need pack more than I need a good screw, but...
Then we'll find a way for you to spend more time with the pack, Derek says. We'll get it done.
Yeah, I guess so.
For the first time, Styles grins.
I thought Chris was gonna kiss my grandmother or something.
I think we were all ready to worship her, but the look on Chris's face was pretty good.
Victoria almost had a facial expression, even.
I would have a stroke.
Styles laughs. It feels good. He manages to put Agent McCall and Peter Hale aside. It's not that late. Only what, 8? Let's go back to the den and watch the Cornetto trilogy. I'm texting everyone. They can show up or suffer the consequences.
Those are the most ridiculous movies,
Derek says, relaxing in increments as Styles himself relaxes.
I don't know how much popcorn we have.
Jake will know, Styles says, texting away. If we don't have much, we can dispatch people to pick some up. Lydia's not exactly a zombie fan anyway.
Derek's eyes roll. So true.
By the time they get back to the den, half the pack is already there. Boyd is making the popcorn and Scott is hauling in 12 packs of soda from the car. The others show up not long after that, and Derek puts the movie on before shifting into his fur. Styles chooses to sit on the floor in front of the sofa so he can be surrounded by the pack on all sides. He leans against Derek's bulk. Lydia curls up on one side of him, and Erica on the other. Isaac is sprawled out across Styles' legs. Styles closes his eyes and falls asleep before the previews can finish rolling.